Yeah, look at ya. All ready and eager for some wholesome entertainment. Well, you come to the right place. If it don't bore you to death, it'll make you more long-suffering. Just keep in mind that everything you hear is totally made up. Snopes don't even give us the time of day. Hee, enjoy the farce.
Hey there, faithful muleteers. Hope this week finds you healthy, wealthy, and wise. If it don't, I'm sure you're still better off than we are. Had a rough couple nights here lately. Seems that miniature dog fighting matches are a thing now. Now, not miniature fights, miniature dogs like chihuahuas and such. It's kind of like midget wrestling, except with tiny canines. We first got wind of it when people started reporting their precious lap pets was missing. We ain't no pet detectives, but when teacup poodles and Pomeranians up and disappear, folks tend to take notice and cause a fuss. We was getting calls day and night from lonely widows and frumpy college co-eds all crying and blubbering about how they miss their little pookie poos and whatnot. Got to be a real hassle, so we poked around and harassed some of the usual suspects. Sure enough, it seemed some lowlife was rustling up small dogs out of yards and kennels and pet stores. We figured they was just selling them on the black market or Craigslist or whatever, but they never left any kind of trail. Some other stuff came up, so we dropped it for a while. Then, two nights ago, we followed a tip about some dog fights taking place in the basement of an old Unitarian church. We went to scope it out, expecting to find a bunch of roughnecks and thugs gathered around a smoke-filled room, betting on Rottweilers and pit bulls. But, boy, were we surprised. First off, they weren't no thugs. They was geriatrics. Old folks, like grandmas and grandpas. Second, the dogs were no bigger than an opossum. In fact, I almost thought they was rodents fighting if it weren't for the ear-splitting noise of their shrill little barks. And man, were they fierce, fast, and vicious. The handlers would let them go and they just tore into each other. Fur a-flying, teeth and claws going, blood and slobber everywhere. It was a sight. Well, most of them old folks couldn't hear much as it were, so it weren't no problem sneaking up on them. Once we got close enough, I hollered, "All right, ladies and gentlemen, playtime's over. We're shutting this operation down." I figured they'd concede and maybe groan a little bit, but I was not ready for what happened next. Them nursing home bodies turned on me, and I knew I had underestimated them. Cowboy tried to be brave and said, "Time to take your meds and settle down for the night, folks. We'll get you all home safe." But I don't think they wanted to go home, because they bum-rushed us and started hitting and clawing with everything they had. Canes, umbrellas, walkers, orthopedic shoes. One feller in a hover round just kept running into my shins until I fell over. Then he proceeded to roll over my legs repeatedly. CB tried restraining him with his power udder juice and tasers, but when one would go down, another just shuffled around him and kept right on coming. It was like being in a zombie movie, I tell you. Somebody caught me in the noggin with a can of Pediasure and my lights went out. When I came to, the place had emptied. CB, bless his heart, was tied to a brick pillar with a bunch of knitting yarn, and he had a crochet needle sticking out of his udder. It was then I knew we had a silver-haired syndicate on our hands. We tried going right to the source. There ain't but a couple retirement communities about, and whenever we'd show up, we got the silent treatment from the administration. This thing obviously went all the way to the top. I wasn't sure if we should call the FBI or AARP. Well, luckily, we got a close associate who also happens to be an old-timer, so we recruited him to help us, and he managed to infiltrate their operation so as we could get the information we needed. Sure enough, the next time they congregated, this time it was at the VFW. We was ready for them. All we had to do was set up a bunch of rockers and lazy boys with afghans draped over them. As soon as them folks came in, they sat right down and went to sleep. No fuss, no muss, no circus bus. All the little dogs got returned to their rightful owners, well, most of them. Some got messed up pretty bad in the fight, so we returned their remains in little shoeboxes, which may not have been the most thoughtful idea in hindsight, but justice was served like applesauce and sugar-free jello. As a word of explanation, our guest today insisted on meeting in a public place. I'm not sure why, but we conceded and agreed to record in a local coffee shop. Our apologies if the background noise is more distracting than usual.
We here at the Red Mullet Cast strive to provide quality entertainment that is occasionally educational. I'm not sure if this segment qualifies as such, but today we are diverging slightly in the interest of benefiting the larger superhero community. As you may guess, the vigilante lifestyle is not necessarily one of glitz and glamour. Many of us have a hard time just getting by. There does exist the odd millionaire playboy who dons a mask and cape in search of some righteous restitution, but by and large, the majority are regular tax-paying citizens with day jobs and bills to pay. We garner little or no thanks, let alone monetary compensation, for our troubles. So I suppose it's a good thing we don't do it for those reasons. I tell you this not out of complaint, though if anyone would like to contribute as a sponsor or Patreon subscriber, we certainly won't turn you away. No, the only reason I mention this is by way of introduction. Our guest today says that he can help those of us who are financially challenged, and he says that part of the problem has to do with our public image. Now, I had never personally heard of this feller before, but after he contacted me, I did some research and have come to the unwary conclusion that he might be onto something. Let's see what he has to say. Welcome with me, Dr. Harold Toboggins.
That's it? I'm on?
Were you expecting something more elaborate?
Well, I am used to a more thorough description of my genius. You know, let people know what they're getting into. In fact, I sent some suggestions over to your secretary.
Sidekick?
But I suppose it's water out of the barn at this point, or cattle over the bridge, or something of that metaphorical nature.
Aw, you can't get good help these days, you know that. Let me see it, CB.
You're not gonna like it.
I'm not reading this.
Told ya.
Rare and stunning genius? Gifted beyond the normal scope of human intellect?
Every powerful treatment comes with a legal disclaimer, and there is quite a bit of fine print when it comes to dispensing my brain power, RM. May I call you RM?
Yeah, sure. What do I call you? Doc?
Dr. Toboggins, your greatness, your geniusness, undisputed pinnacle of the therapeutic arts. Although I must say that above all, I prefer the title Paid in Full. You understand, of course.
Not sure that I do. What exactly are you a doctor of? Again.
The greatest mystery of all, the human mind. A vast breeding ground for ignorance and misconception. I shape the minds of the masses, helping them to achieve their full potential. As I always say, adequacy is within your grasp.
So, a head shrinker.
Among other skills, yes. Although most cases don't call for such extreme tribal remedies. You meant figuratively? Of course, yes. Although that really doesn't do justice to the wide range of skills and talents that I bring to bear on a daily basis. Not to mention the weighty responsibility of molding lesser minds.
Uh-huh. We'll get to that in a second. Tell us, where did you do your studying?
Well, here and there, you know. I studied general superiority at the Dukeston School for the Intellectually Dominant. Before that, I attended the Siberian School of Quasi-Intro-Gastrology. And prior to that, I was enrolled in the Fallon Grad School for Prisons, but I don't really like to talk about that.
I have heard of none of those places.
Well, they're very elite. Frankly, I would have been surprised if you had. Often, alumni like myself will say we went to some place like Harvard or MIT out of a sense of modesty, as so not to overawe people with our vast wealth of education.
I see. So what would you say is your primary focus, your bread and butter? You help people with mental disorders?
I'm not certain if help is the right word. I prefer the term treat. Unless, of course, we're talking about payment, because therapy is never my treat, if you know what I mean. But so often, my patients don't even realize that they have a problem. I have to let them know how sick they are before I can properly treat them. Usually that comes with a concentrated dose of reality.
Okay, I can see where that would be useful. What kind of patients are we talking about? Neurotics? Psychotics? The criminally insane?
Yes, but I find those markets pretty well picked over by lesser therapists and even talk show hosts. So I have focused on a less obvious niche, the do-gooder, marked by obsessive hopefulness, empathic empathy, the compulsive compassion, or even abject artistry. The twisted individuals who slide by on the sanguine underbelly of civilization.
I'm lost again. Maybe, what are some success stories you can share before we move ahead?
Of course, I am tremendously successful all over, but sometimes it's hard to keep track of all my separate greatnesses. But let me see. There's Toboggins Industries, which markets my therapeutic inventions. The mindovermemphis.net, on which I document my many victories over do-gooders. You know, it's basically a platform for my videos and podcasts and other therapies. Zombies Anonymous, you know, and all other manner of treatments.
Did you say Zombies Anonymous?
Indeed. Never has there been a group of people more in need of my brilliance. You see, zombies are a feared and misunderstood segment of the population, shunned by their fellow man purely on the basis of being walking corpses. It's quite sad, actually.
And you've been able to cure them?
I try to stay away from the word cure. It implies a certain termination of my services, which, as you can imagine, is not good for my cash flow. Of course, that's the beautiful thing about zombies. In fact, it's the only beautiful thing. I mean, have you seen them? They're all like, and decomposing all over the place, and their breath. Oh, so bad.
What is?
Their breath, the air that comes out of their mouths. Even though, technically, they're not breathing.
No. What is the beautiful thing about a zombie?
Oh, yes. Their inevitable tendency to relapse. They can never stay on the wagon, as it were. Sooner or later, it's back to brains. A bit unfortunate for whoever's close by when it happens, but job security for me. When you factor in that they have no further use for money, they become the ideal patients. I mean, my therapies are hugely valuable, but so often I have to scale back my fees because my living clients claim to need things like food and shelter. But a zombie and his money are much more easily parted.
Oh, wow.
Although group lessons are rather challenging, with everyone lurching and moaning at once, zombies are quite prone to mob mentality, you know. A lesser therapist would flee in fear or perhaps be eaten. But not me, of course. I am resolute.
You're telling me that you've braved a zombie horde and lived to tell about it? Maybe I underestimated you, Dr. T.
More than once, actually. You would think, given the sheer size of my cranial capacity, that I'd be a primary target for them. But oftentimes, they seem curiously repelled by my forceful and therapeutic presence. It's like a mental force field or something.
That's fascinating. And what kind of weapons do you have? Firearms? Melee weapons? Samurai swords?
Only my staggering intellect. I find that if you don't have your wits about you, you might as well throw in the towel.
I can respect that. It's almost vigilante-like. So you were talking earlier about your niche?
Niche.
Right. About helping or treating do-gooders, you called them? What's that all about?
Well, in every field of endeavor, there are professionals, highly qualified, highly paid individuals, authorized, and official agents of the status quo. But such eminent authorities are not good enough for the do-gooder. They find some underserved segment of society, or need, as they call it, and instead of ignoring it like a healthy citizen, they wade in and address the situation themselves. They have no titles, no credentials, no permission from society. They just jump in and start helping. Often for little or no pay. It's so twisted that I'm getting a little ill just thinking about it.
Like vigilantes.
Well, yes. Social vigilantes. Instead of waiting at home for the proper authorities to handle things, they rush in and take matters into their own hands. Ordinary people with delusions of adequacy, thinking that they can make a difference. Making a mess is more like it. Some misguided soul once told people to be the change that you want to see. But let me tell you, that way lies neurosis. My motto is, give your change to me, and then we'll see.
So, setting aside for just a moment the fact that we are vigilantes who feel the need for justice, you're saying that people trying to make the world a better place are the problem, and that you're trying to treat them?
Yes and yes. I can think of no more severe mental disorder than the one compulsion to act in the best interest of others rather than yourself.
What does that mean for me and Cowboy? We fall into that category?
Well, it doesn't look good, that's for sure. But I can highly diagnose you here on the air for free. You need a more thorough and more costly psychiatric evaluation. But I could probably squeeze you into my schedule next Thursday.
Cowboy?
We're busy.
Doc, your methods seem a little unorthodox, and your motivations even more so, but maybe that's just what we need around here. We're going to go to a commercial break now. When we come back, we're going to hear about your latest entrepreneurial effort and how we can benefit from it.
When it comes to making independent comics for little or no profit, nobody does it better than Camel Eye Studios. With their long history of abject failure, the creators at Camel Eye Studios are experts at producing content that will be utterly ignored and completely shunned by any and all potential customers. That's you! You are the vital piece that is frequently absent from the puzzle which constitutes any kind of successful business model, so far explored by these inept entrepreneurs. And for that, we'd like to thank you. If it weren't for your extreme lack of interest, we might actually feel like our efforts were worth the time and trouble. Your apathy is what keeps us going. Here's to many more years of popular indifference. Camel Eye Studios. If it makes money, we're obviously doing something wrong.
We're back and talking with Dr. Harold Toboggins. Doc, what you got cooking in that big brain of yours?
I'm glad you asked, RM. My latest enterprise is a program I like to call the Profitable Paladin. It's an opportunity for vigilantes like yourself to benefit from my extensive experience in the service sector. Under the illumination of my brilliance, even the most fiscally inept vigilante can rise to the rank of financially independent defender. The likes of which are in short supply, I must say.
Wow, that sounds promising.
That's because it is. The problem with your basic run-of-the-mill heroes, aside from the obvious do-goodery, is that they are simply not operating at their full potential. Take you, for example.
Yeah?
Before dashing out to engage in your fight crime, what is your procedure? How do you prepare for the fight?
I grab my gear and head out in our trusty mullet mobile.
Mm-hmm. And what about pre-heroism hygiene? Do you shower beforehand or shave? What about deodorant or cologne? Do you craft your hair into an elegant style that expresses both your carefree spirit and your innate professionalism?
No, there usually ain't time. Crime don't wait for no pampering.
I see. So you show up on someone's doorstep in that shabby outfit with all that grimy gear, looking like you raided a yard sale on the way, and offer to dispense some justice? Do you get mistaken for the homeless defender? Paid in soup, perhaps?
I admit the uniform is a little weathered, but that equipment is in perfect working order. Right, CB?
I wouldn't say perfect.
Of course. And what about transportation? I assume that broken-down pickup truck over there can get you to wherever you store the mullet mobile without breaking down too often?
Doc, that is the mullet mobile.
This is worse than I thought.
It's in perfect working order.
The bumper appears to be held on by duct tape.
A temporary measure. What's your point?
Image is a critical component of your career heroism. Your costume, accessories, and vehicle must all work together to communicate your brand message. And right now, the message is, we'll fight crime for food. You have to dress for success. Look at me. My suit, my mustache, my game face. It all proclaims the same message. Expensive therapy delivered by genius.
What about that tie of yours? The pattern is so loud, it's hard for me to look at.
It was carefully chosen for its therapeutic value. It stuns potential patients, leaving them like a deer in the headlights, allowing me to move in with a preliminary diagnosis and paving the way for future payments.
Why would we want to stun law-abiding citizens? We save our weaponry for villains.
My point is that when you see me, you know what you're getting.
Misery.
Professionalism. When people see you, however, it is not immediately clear whether you're there to fight crime or to trim the shrubbery.
I hope you're not casting aspersions upon landscaping professionals, because they're fine, hard-working fellows. Except, of course, for the Vicksburg Viniac. He was a handful. But other than that, they're nobody to make fun of.
Fine. My point is that you must dress for success. The less you look like you need money, the more money you can charge. I call it Toboggan's Law. You do charge, don't you?
We have a tip jar epoxied to the bed of our mullet mobile.
Last week we received 2 coupons and a gum wrapper.
Any coupons for canned meat?
Yes, prunes.
That is disappointing. But our work is mostly about seeing justice served.
It sounds like you need to identify some customers and help them see how they are being served. Show them how they need you.
Why would we do that?
People often don't know what they have until it's gone. Or in the case of a criminal removal service like yours, they don't know what's gone until it's back.
I don't follow.
Let's say the next time you capture a villain, you bring him back to the community where he was operating, and you put him on display, perhaps strapped to the roof of the mullet mobile. Then you take up a collection for services rendered.
That might work.
It's all about your value proposition. You proposition the citizens, and if they cough up enough value, you take the villain off to jail. If not, you cut him free until they feel a little more generous.
What? No.
Well, then have you considered employing your own criminals? They would be much easier to capture if you knew who they were and where they were going to be. Your operating efficiency would go through the roof. Give them a few weeks to establish a crime wave, and then you show up at City Hall and offer a CESP, a Crime Eradication Service Package. You collect payment in advance, round up your criminals, and move on to the next territory.
Doc.
No? Well, on to Plan C. You patrol a neighborhood very thoroughly and establish a list of valuables and vulnerabilities that need to be protected. Then you go door to door and have the citizens sign up for a subscription service that keeps that list out of the wrong hands.
What are you saying? Have you lost your head shrinking mind?
Wait. Hold on. This is the wrong presentation. I must have got my notes mixed up.
What's that one say? The financially viable villain?
What? However did that get in there? Oh, clearly a ninja or some sort of other evildoer has planted this presentation among my papers. You may need to re-examine your security procedures. You know, once a ninja finds his way in, he'll build a nest and it's all downhill from there.
Why do I get the feeling you're working both sides of the street?
If you're saying that I'm thorough, then I agree. So let's recap, shall we? explore hygiene, invest in costuming and equipment upgrades, consistent branding, and for goodness sake, find a less vintage vehicle. In short, present an image of success, and success will find you, like a dog at dinner time.
He doesn't bite, right? I don't really like dogs so much.
I'm feeling a bit skeptical all of a sudden.
Very well, let's move on to internet issues. What kind of web presence do you have?
Cowboy?
We have an email address, a Facebook fan page, and a webcomic maintained by an out-of-work artist.
As if there was any other kind. Artists are right up there with do-gooders on my therapy list. But I suppose it is better than nothing. So you have no Twitter or Snapchat or Instagram?
We tried some of that, but found it difficult to keep up with the trends.
I see. How about YouTube or Vines or Tumblr?
No, no, and no.
Right. Well, gentlemen, I hate to break it to you, but nobody's going to care if you don't tell people every detail of your life. Post pictures of your early morning meals, hashtag Breakfast of Champions. Post a video of a high-speed chase and criminal takedown, hashtag Swift Justice. Release a Red Mullet image filter so that people can picture themselves with an orange contrail of hair, hashtag party in the back. Social networking is an absolute must. Have you considered virtual patrols or live tweeting as you make your rounds? If you don't have at least 100,000 followers on some platform, you are a virtual nobody, non-existent. And that is a major handicap when you're trying to boost your popularity, not to mention your profitability.
Are there really people who care that much about this stuff?
Does the Pope poop in the woods?
Why?
Of course, what kind of question is that? Friends, like, shares, reposts. They're what make the world go round these days. In fact, I would not be surprised to see a post on Facebook that said, like and share to see the sun come up tomorrow.
Oh.
I can see this is discouraging you. Let's move on to something else. Maybe take a step back. What do you gentlemen know about branding?
I know that you have to get the iron super hot.
As it turns out, people are surprisingly touchy about that sort of thing. And they have lawyers. Yeah. It really isn't worth it in the long run. Although there are a few zombies lurching about with the Harold's Toboggans logo branded on their forehead. But anyway, personal image branding is your business identity. What sort of iconic symbols do you have that could be useful for marketing strategy?
I got me this long red mullet hanging out here. It's even my natural hair color.
That was intentional? I thought it was an unfortunate side effect of your mutant powers.
I ain't got me any powers.
I have a tactical armored suit that resembles a cow.
Well, that's a start. So what we have to consider here are three things. You have to be married to your image, so I call it the Mrs. or the MRS plan. You need your brand to be memorable, recognizable, and shocking.
Mrs., got it.
First, is your brand memorable? Will people remember it for years to come? More importantly, does it remind people of who you are? Number two, is your brand recognizable? Does it stand out? Can it be confused with any other brand? Is it simple enough to be quickly graffitied onto a wall? Or projected onto a conveniently passing cloud at night? Does it communicate your image effectively? And number three, is it shocking? Does it shock people to their very core? Is it immediately ingrained on their psyche? Do mothers cover the eyes of their children whenever they see it? Do people tell their therapist about it? Does it invoke a sense of terror, or awe, or wonder? These are the questions that we ask when we talk about personal branding.
I'm with you. So how does one go about acquiring an effective brand?
I am so glad you asked, because today only, for listeners of this podcast, Toboggan's Image Consulting is proud to offer a once-in-a-lifetime package deal that will encompass the things we've been talking about in a simple, easy-to-follow, 36-step program. That's right, for 14 easy payments of $19.95 plus shipping and handling, you can be the simple, hassle-free hero that you've always wanted to be. Similar programs go for hundreds of thousands of dollars, but my patented secrets can be yours for less than the price of a luxury automobile.
Toboggan's Image Consultants is not responsible for further economic decline. Failure to profit financially is the sole responsibility of the purchaser. Must assign a loss waiver, non-disclosure agreement, legally binding defamation character clause, and title loan addendums. Licensing restrictions apply. Sorry, no CADs.
All right. Didn't know he was going to do that, but no matter. Dr. T, is this program just for superheroes, or could it potentially benefit anyone who's looking to better themselves?
That's an excellent question, RM. This particular program is specifically tailored for the vigilante lifestyle, but I offer packages for many other career paths. For example, in this series, we have the lucrative lunatic, the prosperous personal injury attorney, rich con, poor con, the art of the charlatan, and money management for the complete megalomaniac.
Once again, you sound like you are catering to the criminal element.
I can't help myself, RM. I am burdened for them. My heart is moved by their sad plight. They put on a brave face, but in truth, they are all alone. They just need someone to reach out and welcome them into the billfold. I mean, to reach out and welcome them into the fold.
Villains.
No, they're money. They have so much of it, and it calls to me. Sometimes I'm too soft-hearted for my own good, always willing to open my wallet to those poor, lonely dollars and raise them as my own.
Yeah. Well, Doc, this has been very educational. You can be sure that me and Cowboy will be keeping a close eye on you in the future.
Well, I am a handsome devil. I can't fault you there. And I've learned a few things myself. For instance, at the beginning of this interview, I suspected that you were merely a backwoods hillbilly with a hero complex.
And now?
I'm certain of it.
Any last words for our listeners?
Yes. Always remember that crime does not pay. It can't. It's an abstract concept. Criminals, however, can pay and pay very well when properly motivated.
Thank you, Dr. Toboggans. Best of luck with your ambitious enterprises.
Thank you. Always glad to have a media outlet for my services. So, when can I expect my check?
That's all the time we have for this episode. Hoping y'all join us next time when we interview more unsung heroes and unrepentant villains on the Red Mullet Podcast.
This has been a Monumental Flounder production, written and produced by Andrew Chandler. Red Mullet and Cowboy, created by Jay Chu. Special thanks today to Brent Diggs, creator of Dr. Harold Toboggans. To hear more of Dr. Toboggans, find him on all social networking platforms. For more Red Mullet and Cowboy content, go to andrewchandler.net.